aviation mechanics. Is it really a dying profession? Let's discuss in the Aeroverse. Welcome to In the Aeroverse. I'm Christy Wong.
And I'm Dan Milliken. And welcome to this very special show. We're going to talk all about airplane mechanics, because that is something that's become somewhat of a crisis in the aviation industry.
And here to talk about aviation mechanics is Mike Vitek and Daryl Irby. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for coming. And you can keep it right here. Don't worry about all that stuff out there.
So. Okay, no worries.
All right, so Mike Vitek. Vitek like the Honda?
Well, we had it first.
Okay. Fair enough. So let's talk about aviation mechanics.
Okay.
They're actually not, are they AMPs, mechanics? What do we call
them?
Well,
we call them aviation maintenance technicians.
Okay.
And that's what we do at Tarrant County College.
Okay, so you guys actually have a program at Tarrant County College.
Yes, we've had a program out there since the mid-70s, I think, wasn't it, Daryl?
Oh, it opened in 1968.
Oh, wow.
Down at Luck Field, down south of town. It was Luck Field, right?
It was Luck Field. Yeah. It was opened on the south campus in 1968. Moved to the Northwest Campus in the 1970s and moved to Alliance in 2014.
How full are these programs with student-wise?
We have a year and a half waiting list, I believe.
Oh, wow.
We have a capacity for 300 students.
You have a waiting list.
We have a waiting list. Now, we have a capacity for 300, but you got to remember this is a linear program. So when they get into the program, you have some attrition.
Right.
Right.
So that's why it's not completely full. That's why there's not 300 students. It's about 268 somewhere in there.
Okay. So real quickly, what is your position within the Tarrant County College School of,
I'm one of the instructors there.
Okay.
And I specialize right now. I'm doing fuel metering systems, you know, like carburetors and fuel injection and turbochargers, things like that. Also teach propellers, and then I have a class where I get the students ready for their OMPs, for their final test before they get their FAA certification.
Interesting. What about you, Daryl?
Okay, so I'm an instructor as well, but I'm also the program coordinator, so I handle the regulatory stuff, the FAA, and we had a big rule change here recently, which you may have heard of. And that's a whole nother story, years in the making.
So, I kind of want to hear about that. What is that?
Okay, well, starting in 2007, our dean was a member of the Aviation Rulemaking Committee, and that's when we were involved in it. This thing started in the 1990s, but we were involved with it beginning 2007. I got involved with it in 2011. And this involved many trips to Washington, D.C., and also ATEC, Aviation Technician Education Council, was involved in it. We met with representatives. We went to their offices, met with Senator Inhofe, if you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. So he's a pilot.
I got to shake. Yeah. Yes, he is. I got to shake hands with him, and he was one of the big champions for this. But the rule was published first in 1962 under Part 147.
So what is the rule?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me give you a little history
first.
See,
you're like building me up.
Yeah,
okay, 1962, right? Well, it didn't change till 2022. With a few little revisions. So we're teaching old technology. We were restricted from some of the new technology because the curriculum was included in the rule. That's the FAA Part 147 rule that regulates schools and maintenance training. So in order to change the rule, it took years and years of work to get us to this point. Now we can start introducing new technology. Airlines have been after us for years to teach the human factors, newer technologies, FADEC. We couldn't teach FADEC before.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Composites. That, yeah. So some of this stuff we was able to incorporate, but there were a lot of restrictions involved, too.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So you've got your college program, mm-hmm. but to become an AMP mechanic or AMT, there are a bunch of different paths you can take, right? You can go to...
There's actually two paths, I think.
There's two paths.
Speaking, yeah.
But like apprenticeship or...
Or going to school. Yeah, and generally the school, I think our program involves something around 75 to 100 college hours. Now, this is for your A&P. And then you can add an additional 25 to 30 hours of regular college courses and get an associate's degree. So that's the way our program's set up.
So it's still 2 to 3 years.
Well, 2 years if you're full-time during the day. And we have lots of students, and we have a full nighttime program. So we have lots of college students that come there that work jobs all day, and they come there at night. And that takes about a year longer.
Okay, and because it's through the college, students are often able to get like financing through federal student loans and whatnot.
And we have a lot of other programs where they get stipends and other.
Yeah. It's an accredited college program through SACS, and it is also Part 147 through the FAA. So we're governed, you know, by the FAA. We also have some state governances that we have to pay attention to, and then SACS as well. Our accreditation. That's where the degree comes from.
What are the advantages and disadvantages to, say, apprentice versus a college program?
Well, with the college program, of course, you have all the rounding of the program because, you know, you teach everything from physics to math to basic aeronautics, and then you go through all the airframe and the power plant classes. When you do it with an apprentice program, generally you're going to be working in the shop, and the shop's going to be focused in general certain areas. And I think if you do the apprentice way, you have to be able to show aptitude in 60% of the 100% of the programs that they want you to be apt with. Okay, so, but with the AMT program going through the school like we have, we pretty much cover all those bases. Now, we're getting more to where we're covering more what the industry wants, as Daryl alluded to earlier. But still, you know, either way you can do it. Now, and also, if you do the apprentice program, it takes 36 months. And then what you do is in that time you've got to study all the information, so because you got to pass a written test and an oral and practical test, kind of like a pilot's license.
All right. So you got to go 2 years if you go through 147,
Yes.
Right. And in 3 years if you're doing an apprentice, if I want to be a pilot, I can get my license a lot quicker. Is this causing a problem in the industry?
Well, I don't know. Can you? What, do you have 1,500 hours where you get an ATP now?
Well, if you're talking about all the way to ATP.
Well, but I mean, that's what you're going to do if you're going to be a pilot, right? That's what you want to do to make money?
Not necessarily.
No. Because I'm not going to be an ATP.
Okay, no. But I'm just saying because what we're talking about is we're talking about sending people on a career path. And
right,
that's what I thought
right.
we were talking about the pilot thing.
Right, but to get a commercial pilot's license so career path. All right, so don't compare it to private pilot. Right. But it just seems to be a lot. Is there any kind of legislation that's coming down to help ease that, or is it still going to be you've got to do 2 or 3 years to become an A&P?
Yeah, there's a few things in the work that's going to help out, I think. One of the things that's going to help out is the hopefully we're going to see a organizational approval testing.
Okay.
Right now, they have to test with a DME. Oral and practical has to be done with a designated maintenance examiner. If the FAA, which they proposed it in 2018, if they approve the organizational designation, the school will actually be able to administer those exams.
That'd be
so
huge.
Right now, that's a bottleneck. That's a choking point.
Oh, that is huge. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys see the state of the current market for AMPs just out in the wild?
You're screaming for people right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. I'm screaming for people.
Yeah, all the airplane owners are screaming
yeah.
for people.
Oh, sure.
Well, I talked to Delta Airlines last year, and we have a partnership with them. They were telling me that 80% of their mechanics are eligible to retire right now.
80%.
American Airlines is telling me 50%. Now, these are anecdotal numbers. I don't have statistics to back it up, but that's
right.
what they're telling me.
Okay.
So, but if you look at the ages of the mechanics, if you go to an IA seminar,
which we're having,
they're all gray hair. So, when I attend the IA seminar, typically they'll do an informal poll of ages, so to speak. And I noticed 2 or 3 years ago at ASOD when I went to that IA seminar, they asked for anybody over 60 to raise their hand, and most of the people in the room raised their hand.
So what I'm hearing is that we could probably open 10 more of these schools,
Absolutely.
And they would be full.
Absolutely, and that's coming too, especially in the private sector.
Really,
but they're a lot more expensive.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is there any plans for your guys' program to expand at this point?
There's another question for Daryl.
Yeah.
Well, actually, on Monday, I have a meeting with the president's cabinet, and I'm going to do a presentation regarding the new rule, curriculum modernization and expansion. So we're making that proposal. The president of the campus is already aware of it, and she supports it. So then it's just finding the resources to do it. So I think we're on the right path, and hopefully we'll get that done.
That's really good news. That's really, really inspiring.
How many of your students are heading into GA versus those that are going into airline maintenance?
I think if you talk to most of them, I don't know about most of your guys, but most of my guys, they're all looking at, or for the most part, commercial aviation, you know, getting into with one of the big airlines or something. There's a small number that want to do general aviation. On general aviation, however, you know, it's an up and down deal. I mean, and that goes especially around this area. I know that my experience, of course, I had my own shop for a long time, and my business would fluctuate depending on, especially in this area, once again, on the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. When that was down, my business was down. When it was up, that was up. And so you regulate the people you have and all that based on that. So it's a little bit more unstable environment. You get on with one of the airlines, you pretty much know what you're going to have, and you'll be there for a while.
But we're seeing them go to different parts of the industry. We're seeing them go to the airlines. We're seeing them go to manufacturers, repair stations, some to GA. But GA is...
Well, that's pretty widespread.
Yeah. Okay. GA is always needing mechanics, and the mechanics are not wanting to go to GA because...
Yeah.
But now you
is
get...
Is there a solution to this?
Well, I was just going to say this. With the GA market, now I was with the little bitty airplanes for the most part.
Right.
And the big stuff, I worked on some Citations and King Airs and things. But for the most part, it was a smaller aircraft. You get into the upper end of general aviation, and you're talking about the corporate stuff where you're right. working on Gulfstreams and Lears and things like that on a regular basis. But to your question.
Well, okay, I own a Cessna 210. Mm-hmm,
sure.
She owns a Cherokee Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's becoming hard. My AMPIA is one of the guys that would definitely raise his hand for over 60, and he's trying to retire. And I'm looking around going...
People are begging you not to.
Where am I going to take my plane now for every year for an annual or whatever? And is there a solution for getting mechanics in the GA area? Because I see it as... a really big problem here in about 5 years.
It's a lot. It's you know, not just the issues with just the FAA and its responsibilities from that standpoint, but also just the regular economic things and the deals the issues you have to deal with the government and all the reporting and all that stuff. So there's a lot of intricacies involved and a lot of costs involved outside of just working on airplanes. So that kind of limits that, and things have gotten a lot more expensive out there anymore. If you go out there and you wanted to rent a 2,000-square-foot hangar to just start a little business working on a small aircraft, that hangar's gone from $1,000 a month to $5,000 a month.
Oh, gosh.
And so, you know, it just gets expensive.
Yeah. It's getting scary.
If you want to open a GA shop, you're talking about hangars, but you're also talking about liability insurance.
Oh, that's crazy.
Technical data, manuals.
Tools.
So tools are a big part of that.
And
technical
experience.
Data has become huge.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a subscription for, what's it called now, Varion
it's
now?
About $53,000 a year.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's to have up-to-date, and that's one of your requirements. You've got to have up-to-date data in order to do this work. So it's expensive.
I'm not getting the feel-good from this conversation,
no.
You guys.
I don't have a lot of good news for you for general aviation.
Well, if you guys ever want to come work on a small aircraft, let me know.
Well, I guess what will happen, I think one solution is that unfortunately, us airplane owners are going to have to pay higher rates for the mechanics. And
rates now are running anywhere from, what, $95 to $100 an hour to $150 an hour.
Yeah. Oh, there are shops in the area charging almost $200 an hour.
And you can understand why.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I do understand.
I'm sad, but I understand.
Yeah. I'm hurt, but I understand.
Yeah, I bleed, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on and answering these questions.
Sure.
Final thoughts before I leave and go cry.
Well, I don't want to paint a picture of doom and gloom for general aviation because there's always going to be people there that want to work on small airplanes.
Right.
So I love small airplanes. I own a Bonanza, and I play with it all the time. So it's my hobby as well as my avocation or my vocation.
Okay.
Well, I think that as long as we've got people, I mean, because if you look at the students that we have, it kind of gives you a little bit of hope because there's still some of those people coming through that have the same sort of love because that's what we have for this. You have a certain amount of love for this business because Lord knows, I want to own a small or general aviation shop. You look at the bank book every once in a while and say, I got to love this place.
and before we close it out, I do want to bring up another subject real quick and get your thoughts on it. What are your feelings on owner-assisted maintenance for the GA?
How about it all depends?
So I'll tell you that.
Well, here's the thing. You got to remember that the man has the responsibility of making sure that you're safe, and to make sure that you follow all the regulations. And so within that context, you got to keep in mind that if somebody says it comes up to you and says, "Gee, I want to help," don't get your feelings hurt if he says no. Because that's a lot of responsibility, you know. You hear about these people that go out and things happen. You know, you have an emergency or something like that. And you want to make sure that what you do is not going to be responsible for that emergency. So,
yeah, I would say that with my AMPIA threatening retirement and not knowing what to do, I went ahead and he let me do an owner assisted annual. The knowledge that I picked up just from those 3 weeks of working on it.
Oh, yeah.
I now know so much more about my plane than I did before that it just was eye-opening. So,
yeah. Invaluable.
Well, an owner-assisted annual, that's one of those few areas where, you know, normally you say the customer is always right. You got to back off.
Oh, no. There were times where I was going, you know what, I'm the owner. This is okay. No, it's not. You know, and
that's what we get down to.
Yeah.
You know, you can, I mean, you got to look from this perspective, too. If you have a missing placard on your airplane, it's unairworthy.
Right. Yeah, so one of the things I did right toward the end of the annual is we went through and checked all our placards and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that scrupulous. I mean, you got to be that minute about the inspections.
Time to get OCD.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and cooperation is real important, too. Cooperation and understanding that the IA has a job to do, and there's a lot of responsibility there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again so much for coming on talking with us about this. It's a hot
topic.
We could
go on forever.
Yeah, I know. It's a hot topic. It's one that needs to be talked about, though. So, thank you again, you guys. Thank you so much for watching the Arrowverse. We have a lot of really cool content here.
So check it out. Yeah. So we'll see you guys next time.
In the Arrowverse.